Now, forgive me if you've heard the story before, but it is one of my favorite stories. And you know, as people get older, they tell their favorite stories often and a lot and louder eventually. But when Maria Ramos took over at APSA, I put her on the cover of FinWeek magazine with the words hospital pass on the magazine. And so she got her copy and it ended up on her desk. And she went, oh, look, I'm on the front cover of the magazine. Hospital pass. She was a bit perplexed, so she took the magazine home with her, and she said to her husband, Trevor Manuel, and his two burly sons, she said to them, what does this mean? I think it's a sporting term. So they enacted in the family lounge the principle of the hospital pass, and she saw it in action, and she acknowledged to me a couple of years later that I'd been absolutely spot on. She believed she'd been given a hospital pass taking over at APSA at the time that she did. And she's, of course, recently retired. So can we give the mantle of hospital pass to my next guest? He is the chief executive of EOH. His name is Stephen Fonkolla, who was at one time the head of the investment bank at APSA. He spent a little bit of time at MTN before going out of the frying pan and into the fire of EOH. Is your hospital pass to EOH bigger than the hospital pass that Maria Ramos received when she took over at APSA?
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me. It's been a very interesting journey. There's been obviously...
No, yes or no, and then we'll get on to interesting journeys.
I think hers was probably bigger.
Okay, so you've got an easy job, because I've done a Twitter poll this evening. There's still about 20 minutes left in which people can vote. And I've asked on Twitter, so go there, Bruce Business, at Bruce Business on Twitter, which chief executive has South Africa's toughest job right now? And I've given you the option of Cyril Ramaphosa, Stephen Fonkolla at EOH, Louis Depreer at Steinhoff, or Stephen Saad at Aspen. There's 16 minutes left if you'd like to participate in that vote, which will take us very neatly to the end of the show. And then we'll see whether or not Stephen Fonkolla, in your opinion, has got the hardest job or not in that particular case. So you made an interesting choice. You went from the comfort of banking, where you were comfortable and you were running the corporate investment bank, a big and important job. You went to MTN with a whole bunch of former chief executives and FDs and very high-powered individuals. And a year later, you went, this isn't hard enough. Let me go to EOH.
Yes, it was an interesting opportunity. I got asked by the board and the shareholders, some of the shareholders, to come and assist them. I think they'd realized that they'd built a company up very, you know, quickly. It got very big. It was 273 legal entities, and they needed someone who had managed a big organization and could try and, you know, bring it together. And
they need
sort
somebody
it out.
Who could unscramble an egg, basically an ostrich egg.
Well, it wasn't just that. I think it was unscrambled. The issue was is that they tried to put it together, and it didn't have the processes and the procedures that you require in a large listed company. And this is where it was struggling, really, to move forward.
I mean, because people often say to me, you talk about EOH, what does it do? And I go, technology. But it's a billion different technology ideas and concepts and 273 business models all under a single banner. It's very hard to describe what EOH does other than it's in technology.
No, that's right, Bruce. I mean, I've used this analogy and it sort of got out of context a bit of this vegetable soup, and they've put it all together and they're reportive and all together, and you don't know in the soup whether it's 10% carrot or 90% carrot, and if you put a little bit of vinegar in, the whole soup goes off. And this is the problem. It's actually a modular business. You've got the old systems integrator, which has got about 50 partners. So it can do anything, SAP, Microsoft, Oracle, OpenText, etc. And it will manage end-to-end. So you've got the infrastructure layer, you've got the data and data storage and cloud layer, you've got all the software applications layer, which is where most of the partners are, and then you've got what they call the app dev. So you put the
you've even started speaking tech.
Yeah, it sort of gets to you after a while. But that's really to put it all together and do sort of front-end. Then you've got the next tech business, which is actually two. It's the what I call the next generation business.
But this is stuff, the next tech is the business that you're spinning out of EOH. And this is the stuff that does real world things. So this is, makes water flow better and does pumps and engineering proper things, not IT stuff.
Yeah, using IoT, big data analytics. It collects a lot of data and in real time analyzes it and then makes changes, whether it's traffic management, whether it's water and sanitation management, whether it's leak management, etc. You know, that's what they do. But all of those businesses, we will create separate entities. So it's not just Nextech. It's going to be, there'll be an ICT business, both a public sector one and a private sector one. There'll be Nextech. And then there's about five or six software companies that shouldn't be in a systems integrator, because you want more than one channel to market. And at the moment, they've only got one. And so we want to, you know, spin those all out, get separate partners, get separate capital structures, separate governance, separate boards. And then you can put separate investors in and you can grow them in parallel rather than series. That's happening now.
You came into the public domain very loudly recently when Microsoft went, we're not going to do business with EOH anymore because of corruption. And then everyone went shtum. And it's corruption in one of the 273 businesses, which is being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States over a contract between EOH and police, the police force, over a Microsoft product. And suddenly the whole of EOH gets tainted. So each and every one of the other 272 businesses within EOH sort of gets a cold as well.
It's very unfortunate that, I agree, because it's not really right. And this is the issue, you know, when you, I've been with the banks through the LIBOR and the FX, and the way we dealt with the DOJ and the SEC was to sit, go through an investigation, assist what they wanted, and then you come up with, okay, what is the sanction? What are the issues? What do we have to do to get it right? And I mean, this is how you do that. I think it's really unfair for a whole business to get painted with a brush when there's 12,500 people and, you know, the actual issue is ring fenced to a handful that have
But it's not the only EOH business that's had its integrity questioned. I mean, there was a big acquisition 3 or 4 years ago. I forget.
GCT.
Correct. And that brought EOH into the public domain in an unflattering way. Eventually, GCT was sold back to the owners, and it kind of hoped it went away. But once that sort of stink hits a business, anything it does is then called into question. And there are 4 or 5 entities that have question marks over them within the group, right?
Actually, I mean, other than there's GCT, we had an issue and obviously sold it back. There was this recent one with SAP and TTCS, which was actually before we'd acquired them. But there is exactly what I was talking about. You know, SAP approached us with the DOJ. We cooperated. We gave them everything. We then realized what the issues were. The DOJ said, this is what you have to do. And if you do all that, then we happen. If you have a look on the DOJ website, they'll tell you, this is what we expect you to do. If as long as you're doing the right thing, it will, you know, be resolved. And this is how we need to work together. And I think this is a South African issue that we should be working together to solve it rather than
So much corruption is systemic in South Africa. We just have to turn on our TVs at any time of day or night and there's some commission going on where somebody's confessing some sort of terrible crime against humanity. And it feels like, you know, if you're not corrupt, could you put your hand up, please? Because that's so much easier than identifying everyone who is.
It's interesting, you know, in although the Microsoft issue was, you know, a very difficult issue, I wasn't aware of it. It suddenly happened. In a way, it's been quite good because it's galvanized people. It's galvanized the most of the EOH staff. So we're starting to have the right conversations, have a look at the right issues. And it does seem to be limited into the public sector unit, and not all the contracts, but some of the contracts, and we're dealing with those at the moment.
But a large proportion of EOH's revenue has been dependent on the public sector, and that's the problem over time.
No, it's about 15% of revenue, so I wouldn't say a large portion. That will slowly diminish. Last year we closed the very complex implementation unit because we've seen it at the big public sector private sector companies. When you do these big change projects that take 3 or 4 years, they're pretty difficult. They always overrun. This is even more difficult in government, where you've got fixed budgets and very tight you know, budget process. When they overrun, there's a problem. And we unfortunately got on the wrong side of some of those. So we've closed that unit down and we're running it out at the moment.
Is EOH a business with integrity?
Certainly, I would say 99% of it, yes. There have been some issues, and I think this is not abnormal in a country of 10 years of state capture. I think we're going to find it bleeding into, you know, anyone who has dealt with these state captured entities, because it became a way of business. And you can see there's a real modus operandi, and it just gets repeated. So of the things we've looked at, it's all very similar. And so we've been
typically maybe broad brushstrokes. How has it worked?
Well, what happens is you obviously have big tenders. You've got this enterprise development legal requirement, which in itself is the right thing, but the way it's been enacted is creating avenues to siphon money out of
the law needs to be tightened.
I think so, and also the way it's managed. Because at the moment, it can be a bit of a tick box exercise. And then, you know, you've got 30% of a very large contract, which is now just floating, and that tends to get siphoned out.
But you go to a big contract, which is then divvied up between 10 or 12 different players, and suddenly managing that process is like managing a little mini EOH.
No, it's very, very difficult, because remember, we operate only on a 10 to 15% margin, and 30%, now you now need to divvy up between, you know, 10 or 12 entities. And you know what? This is so similar to what happened to the banks in 2008-09, if you remember, with all that introducer legislation that then came in, because they had these middlemen that were helping them get business, and this was the issue, and the lots of fines were paid, and the banks had to go through a whole process and lots of compliance and everything. I think the rest of the world is just starting to go through that right now.
So you've got 273 businesses. Some are corrupt. You are on record as saying that you will press criminal charges, which is quite vague. How serious are you about prosecuting people within the ranks of the organization who you can prove through forensic investigations, which no doubt you are carrying out, are criminally liable for abusing a position of trust?
So, I mean, we can't prosecute.
But you can lay charges. You can lay charges, and then government.
Exactly.
That has to go through
a process. We've already submitted one Section 34 report, and that's really if you have suspicion of fraud above 100,000 rand in this country, you have to report it.
Yes, it's an obligation on companies, otherwise CEOs get into trouble.
Exactly right. Yeah. And so we've already issued one of those, mainly because we found things that, for me, were problematic, and I wasn't sure that it wasn't, you know, a problem. And so we've actually issued that, and we'll continue to provide that feedback. Clearly, it's quite a big process, because you now go and do keyword searches on your email servers, and you get all the, you know, emails together, and then you have to get someone to trawl through, and then you find something, you go and have a look at it.
Is there no company within EOH's 273 that's got the AI capability to go and do that work?
Yes, we have, thank goodness, and they are doing it.
Are they? Okay. Yes. That's useful. So you can use insiders to catch the bad guys inside.
No, it's been actually very useful, because you actually very quickly get information, as opposed to going through a long process with an external party. Yes, they.
At least you know it works.
Yes, it does. It's actually very helpful. I could recommend them to anyone.
I once spoke to a very experienced investor who's been in financial markets for an awfully long time, and said, be very careful. I think he was referring to Steinhoff, but he could have been referring to EOH at the time too. Companies that make acquisitions in quick succession, the biggest problem is that you inherit all of these companies' problems and their cultures and their legacies, and then you throw them all together in the melting pot of the corporation, and you kind of think that they're all fit because it makes sense on paper to do so. But it takes years to integrate. And I mean, one looks at the speed of acquisition of EOH, and it was almost indecent at times.
No, I mean, this is the problem. It was also a method. And if you are going to do acquisitions, you need to have your policies and procedures. If you want to become part of this company, this is what you have to sign up to, and you have to implement it within, you know, 12 or 6 months. With EOH, there was a bit of a different process, where they said, okay, we'll buy you. You've got 2 years of warranties to earn your full payment, and we're going to leave you alone for 2 years. And what happens then is then 2 years down the line, you're already on to the next lot of acquisitions and you sort of forget about it. So there were some very good acquisitions done in very clever verticals where they were seeing the future of where IT was going. And so that's what creates this modular, very good businesses largely, but never properly integrated. So only the ICT business, which was the historical business, which was started 21 years ago, is the most integrated.
Yeah.
As you move into the more next generation stuff and the software stuff, some of them actually give me lip service because they've got their own FD and they've got their own HR lady and, you know, they do their stuff and, you know.
Because being part of the corporate hasn't worked for them.
Exactly right.
Being too complicated.
Well, they've been left out there rather than.
How many people want out? How many of these 273 businesses want to get out?
I'd say a handful, actually. I mean, that have actually spoken to me. And it's really largely the ones where there's duplicates, where they're actually competing internally and they're the smaller of the two. And so they don't get the same attention. There's a few that we've bought in far-flung places that really aren't getting any attention at all. And one of the things was, give me access to your customers and give me access to capital. And they've got neither. And so 3 or 4 years later, they're now going, well, this hasn't worked. You know, can I just carry on with myself?
Can I give you 10 cents of what in the round of what you paid me and I'll leave without any problem?
Yes. And so really what we're trying to do, even in this separation of the businesses, is to give the managers incentivization back in their individual businesses. Mm. Not the 273, but the sort of 7 to 10.
So are you looking at these 273 companies and you're saying, let's put you then into silos or into separate businesses? Are they big enough to list 10 separate businesses out of EOH? Do you break up the corporation, the conglomerate?
Yes, I think you have to. I mean, at the moment, the way it's structured, I don't think is best for employees. I don't think it's best for growth in the businesses. And in some cases, I don't even think we're the best holder of the businesses, because I think there's better, you know, companies out there to actually use the skills and what. And so all we're going to do over time is it's going to become a mediocre business. And I don't think that's fair on the employers. And I mean, that was the main reason why I was brought in. I mean, I'm a banker by background, out of the corporate finance world. And this is what they wanted to do, is let's have a look at it in the whole and get the best value out for shareholders, for clients and for the employees. And that's really what I've been doing.
So is the plan a massive unbundling?
Yes. I wouldn't say unbundling has got a connotation in banking where you just give it all up to shareholders. I don't think that's their shit. It's the separation out of the logical business units. We'll find partners. In some cases, we'll keep a shareholding. Some cases we won't. If someone comes and offers me a ridiculous amount of money, maybe we'll, you know, let it go.
But EOH continues to exist. Does EOH play mothership with 10 different businesses underneath it? Or does EOH operate as, what do you call it, the CCS business, I think? That's the core. And then sells off the 10 units?
So what EOH, the holding company that's listed at the moment, will become like an investment holding company, almost like a private equity company. You could call it the bid vest of tech, if you want to call it that.
And well, that makes it clearer. Yeah.
Yes, and so each of the businesses will run themselves, just like McCarthy was part of Bidvest, but they had their own board, they ran it. And as a shareholder, you'll then influence strategy and make sure you're happy with the governance and, you know, what they stand for and everything. And then try and maximize the investment and go back to what EOH was good at, and that was predicting the future of ICT. So get through the fourth industrial revolution and now start on the fifth and start, you know, maybe accumulating assets, you know, for that next.
If we don't have electricity, we won't get through the second. do you have days when you wake up in the morning thinking, what the hell did I sign up to? Life used to be easier. Not easy, but easier.
Yeah, I mean, they say if you're not living on the edge, you're taking too much space.
That was a no-fear payoff line. 20 years ago, one of the best advertising campaigns for a clothing brand ever. Brilliant, yes.
But yes, I mean, it's, you know, sometimes you just have very long days and it's quite stressful on your family. I mean, I'm just a normal guy, waking up in the morning, making coffee for the wife, doing the kids and taking them to school, you know. But
do you make lunchboxes?
I don't, fortunately. Okay. The wife does, but I make a coffee, so we sort of...
You got to divide the...
Correct.
Do you regret saying, dear valued stakeholder, a new dawn at EOH? Because new dawn 18 months ago was all hope and aspirational. New dawn nowadays is like, oh, it's not worked.
Yeah. No, listen, there is a real opportunity. Yeah? The biggest issue is going to be dealing with the Microsoft issue and dealing with some of the other issues.
It's such a small percentage of your revenues, what, 10 million rand or something like that. But reputationally, it's really knocked you for six.
Yeah, you know, Microsoft's a big company. I've been in big companies. They don't make these decisions lightly. I mean, clearly they've got some of their own issues to deal with. They've told me that they can't help me until they finish their investigation. It looks like it caught them offside as well.
And do they worry that they've got insiders involved in this on their thing as well? Is that what the SEC is investigating?
Well, I'm sure that's why they're saying their investigation is going to take 6 to 12 months and I must just wait. And it's very difficult for me to wait 6 to 12 months, yeah. Those people who know me. And so, you know, we are working together to minimize impact on customers. But, you know, those discussions are going on, and you know what it is, working through a big corporation is very slow, and it goes through, you know, lots of gates before it comes back to you. So I'm just persevering and being as irritating as possible.
I can tell you that South Africa doesn't believe you have a difficult job. I did a 45-minute poll on Twitter, and I asked, which chief executive has the hardest job? Cyril Ramaphosa is chief executive of South Africa, Stephen Fonkola at EOH, Louis de Preez at Steinhoff, or Stephen Saad at Aspen. It's a close-run thing, other than Cyril Ramaphosa, who 69% of people say has got the hardest job. And then it's Louis de Preez at Steinhoff, then Stephen Saad, and only 9% of respondents say that you've got a tough job. So basically what they're saying is, toughen up, I think. Are you enjoying it? Do you like the puzzle?
Yes, it's a very interesting puzzle. I think it's really stretching every bit of experience I've had over the last 25 years.
What you've been working for, yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, hopefully I'll be able to sort it out and get some, you know, value back and get the business back on its feet. I think it's possible.